we're talking about Shlomo Melech and Shlomo Melech making the Beis HaMikdash. So the last thing we just learned was that Shlomo Melech sent a message to Hiram, the king of Tsur, telling him, listen, I know what my father wanted to do. It's time for me to start building the Beis HaMikdash. I'd like you to be involved. I'd like you to make everything with me. Okay. Ma'i, says in Pasuk Chaval. Hey, Chaval. Ma'i kishmal Hiram is Dibre Shlomo. When Hiram heard the words of Shlomo, Ma'i Yismach Ma'od, he got very happy. Baruch Hashem, Hayom HaShanasam Adam Ben Chacham Al-Amar Avazeh. Blessed is God today who has given David HaMelech a wise son on this great people. Number one, you notice something about these Gerim or quasi-Gerim or about-to-be-Gerim who keep saying the word Baruch Hashem. This is Yisro and Hiram are the only people who say Baruch Hashem throughout the entire Torah. Sure. They are the ones that say it that way. The hint is that Jews always say Baruch Atah Hashem. They were somehow disconnected a little bit. Nonetheless, a non-Jew can connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu even closer than a Jew can. It's a little bit strange. They have the ability to if they find God. What's up there?
Wait, can we go back for a second?
Yeah.
Shlomo said he wasn't going to accept Hiram's wood for free, right?
Yeah.
But we've seen, subsequent to that, we've used kalim in the Beis HaMikdash that were
donated.
Yeah. You know, non-Jews.
It's not that, it's in the second Beis HaMikdash,
yeah.
Because that was all donated by Darius II. There's no question. Regardless, when it comes to stuff like this, that in and of itself, and yeah, it's not that it was usher to. Shlomo didn't want to.
Okay.
That's more of it. And plus, this one was a lot more awesome, so that does make it a little
different. Did they find the Shemir one? Like, where did that come from?
That's what he said from the Medrash with Ben Yoyada, where he went to go get it from the Nagar Tura with Hashemad, the king of the demons. That's what we brought up last week. That was the whole thing. We'll bring it up again because we have to get to it again. But you saw here about Shlomo Lamor. Hiram sent to Shlomo Melech saying, Shemati Yisrael Shlomo Eli, I have heard what you sent to me. And he says, Kol Kapsachol, Ba'atei Arozim, Ba'atei Broshim, I will give you everything you want when it comes to cedars and cypress. Now, I don't know the real difference between the two. The best I can tell you is cedars are tall and very strong. Cypress are a little bit smaller, but a little bit sturdier. Okay, that's what it's supposed to be between the two. Avadayo Ridu Min HaLivanon Yama, my servants will bring them down from the Livanon, which was a huge forest, to the sea. Mani Asimim Dovros Bayam, and I will make them into rafts onto the sea. Until the place that you send to me, in other words, until the place that you want me to send the rafts to. Now, I'm going to send tons of rafts through. Yeah, it's very much quicker that way. Okay, so that's that. But Ipaktim Shom, we'll break them up there. Atatisa, you'll be able to carry them from that area. And you'll do my desire. My only desire is for you to give bread to my household. In other words, I want to make I don't need to make money for the wood itself. I just need to not lose money. Okay, so basically you're not even paying me cost. You're paying me just for the amount of just food and provisions, that's that. Now, the land of Lebanon happens to be very mountainous with not a lot of farmland or anything like that. So the forests of Lebanon were the exports for them to import any type of food that they needed they couldn't make in Lebanon itself. I don't know the way it is today. But if you roam, now because Hiram did such a great thing and an added bug, a letter of Hashem's name was added to his name. No sin l'shoma atzei rozen atzei brosim kol chav. So he gave him cedar wood and cypress wood, everything he wants. Shlomo nathan l'chirim esrim elef kor chitim. Shlomo gave to Hiram 20,000 kor of wheat, makolas l'beiso, which would be provisions for his house. The esrim kor shemen kasis, and 20 kor of crushed oil, kol yitei shlomo l'chirim shana b'shana. He gave him that every single year. I don't know how much that is. I can't tell you exactly. But yeah.
Okay, so you have no gauge if this was worth more than the wood.
No, we don't know. We do know that the oil was a good quality. That's what I mean by crushed oil. In other words, there's something that was high-quality oil, free of impurities or whatever.
Israel already, wasn't Israel at this time known for that?
Yeah, I would assume so. The oil was well-known.
Is that when, Yaakov gave to Paro, or?
Well, that's a long time ago. I know, but Yaakov gave them spices and stuff.
Spices?
Yeah. The wheat was also, it was some type of wheat that had a hard shell that would make it more durable so it would be able to survive the trip on the way there. Some say that this is just the work food, but he gave them money as well. But this is the work food. They needed this amount of money for the workers for them to eat while they were working itself. Okay. He's a big kasha. Hiram may have had gaiva. And if he did have gaiva, then he decided at the end of his life that he was going to rebel against the Kadosh Baruch Hu. When was the end of his life? Well, he's already been living from the times of Yehuda, right? He lived for 1,200 years. Okay, he lived to see the destruction of the first base of Mikdash. At the end of the destruction of the first base of Mikdash, he said, I've outlived all the kings of Israel. I've outlived all the Shoftim. I've outlived my friend Yehuda. I've outlived all these people. It must be that I'm a God. Must be that I'm a God. That's what he concluded. So he said, since I'm such a great person, then therefore I have to create a special palace. He used his magic and he created a seven-tiered palace in the middle of the Mediterranean Sea. Okay, he had different levels in each one of them. He made his own constellations, his own sun and moon and stars, which are pretty impressive. And then he created his own malachim that were going there, and he had his own kifyakov that was on the seventh
Let's
level.
Just call it three, okay?
Yeah. Yecheskel, that's a little bit more than that. Yecheskel was sent to go knock him down. So Yecheskel came to go see him. He flew up in the air. Remember, Yecheskel was flying everywhere. Yecheskel came up to Chirim and said, why do you have Gaiba O Ben Adam? Chirim was very scared. He said, if you don't get off your high horse, then God will kill you, he'll knock you down, and he'll throw you back down to the ground. So Hiram Melitzer didn't listen, so Nebuchadnezzar came, destroyed the palace, took Hiram, and then he had Bia with his mother in front of him. Apparently Hiram's mother was alive, but I don't know what that means exactly if he was 1200 years old. And then he cut off two tefachim of flesh every single day and fed it to him until he died. That was Hiram. So it's pretty good, right? That was the punishment for Hiram toward the end of his life.
That's one. I'm just saying, it sounds weird that he slept with his mother.
Yeah, weird in and of itself. Nunu, that's another thing. I will tell you, there is another medrash that says that Hiram Melitzer went to Gan Eden alive. It's in Derech Eretz Zuta, Perek Aleph, toward the end, that he went to Gan Eden alive, even though he wasn't Jewish.
He deserved that.
That's pretty good. Yeah, it's pretty good. Vashem Nachman Chokhma Lashmol Kachidirolo, yeah.
Is there a general consensus that these were the same two theorems?
Yeah, there's one medrash that says it. I don't know, general consensus. You know,
okay.
Yeah, you know. God gave wisdom to Shlomo like he spoke to Shlomo ben Chirim ben Shlomo Yechzupas Shnehem. There was peace between Chirim and between Shlomo, and made a bris between them, a deal between them without any problem whatsoever. Okay. Yahweh Melech Shlomo Masmi Kol Yisrael is in Pasuk Chaf Zayin. Bnei Yisrael took up the tax from Bnei Yisrael. We amash Shlosh Melech Ish. The tax was not money. It was 30,000 men. He took them, or he sent them to Lebanon, right? 10,000 per month. And there would be new changes, right? There were shifts that were made. There would be 1 month in Lebanon, 2 months in their house. Adoniram Alamas. Adoniram, as we mentioned before, was in charge of these taxes. He thus had 70,000 porters, and 80,000 couriers of the mountain. Now, it seems very interesting. How many people did he just send? 30,000. But here we're saying there were another 150,000 people, 70,000 and 80,000. Aside from the princes, the supervising officers at Shlomo Melech and Shlomo Melech that were in charge of the work, 3,300 people that commanded the people in order to tell them what to do the work. So where did these 150,000 people come from? Where did these guys come from? So if you remember, there were Jews that were called the Givonim. The Givona were made into water carriers and wood choppers. Now, although they may not have been alive, something like it was around during the times of David HaMelech. And remember, they were the ones who, when David HaMelech went to them and said, what can we give you? They said, give us the seven sons of Shaul HaMelech and let us kill them. Those Givona were never allowed to take Klal Yisrael. Instead, they were used as slaves to be able to build up the base of Mikdash. And that's what it was. There were 150,000 people altogether, and those are the three people that were right there. Okay, now, this is not slavery. And the reason why it's not slavery, even though he's making them work for a month straight outside of Eretz Yisrael, is because, number one, they were off for 2 months and only working for 1 month and still getting paid. Which means slaves don't get paid vacations. That doesn't happen whatsoever. Okay, that's number one. Number two, whatever needs to be done needs to be done. You don't do like easy shortcuts like throwing stuff in the sea in order to make a raft. If they needed to do it, then they had to do it. But otherwise, you didn't have to worry. There were many volunteers. There were a lot of people when they heard the base of interest was being rebuilt. They said, we want to be involved. So they came along as well. It also could be, I mean, using our American ingenuity, right? Calling it or idiocy, whichever you want to call it. It could have been a growth stimulus, an economic plan that he had put into place. The same thing that FDR did at the end of of the Great Depression, where tons of young people were out of work and they couldn't find work anywhere. So we created a national parks and recreation system where there were people that were sent out to everywhere to make parks, create something good, and they would be the rangers and things like that. And people were sent out to go do that, meaning giving them a job in a place that they wouldn't have. So to here, Shlomo took a bunch of people that had no jobs, that couldn't find a job anywhere, and he gave them an economic stimulus, you know, this type of bonus that they'd be able to do in order to, I guess you could say, to stimulate the company and stuff like that, the academy. So the king commanded, they brought forth these huge, heavy stones in order to make these sod for the house. They were hewn stones. And remember, the hewn stones are a little bit of akasha. How can you use the stones? You're not allowed to do it with metal. You can use metal, but not on harabayas. So they could hew it, I don't know what the word is. I think it's Hewitt,
yeah,
right? Outside the Mishkan itself, yeah. With a hay, thank you. Right? And then afterward, come back and be able to give it, you know, be able to bring it in that way. And the last pasuk it says in Pasuk Lamed Beis, Vayisulu b'nei Shlomo b'nei Chirom v'agiblin v'yachinu ha'itim ha'avanim l'vnos ha'bayis. So Shlomo's builders and Chirom's builders, right, the Givlim, we don't really know what Givlim are. Givlim are either people who are very skilled in shaping them, or refers to people that were hired to make the boundaries. They were the guys in charge of the boundaries themselves. What did they do? They carved, and they prepared the wood and all the stones in order to build the base venture. So everything was set up beforehand. Before they built the base venture, they had all the supplies available. What's going on?
Does any of the Jews know anything about the base venture, considering it hasn't existed beforehand?
I know, how do they know how to make it?
Yeah, make it, or how they know they're the only join in on building
they
need
the concept.
Yeah, the concept is the Mishkan. The Mishkan is definitely around, and they all knew that eventually there was going to be a base venture. They all knew the Mishkan was temporary, and they were just waiting to build the Beis HaMikdash. That they all knew about. How they know about it, that's a good call, because there is no mention of a Beis HaMikdash in the Chumash directly. It's only indirect. But I would assume through Torah Shabbat and the Gemara, they must have known that there's going to be. Like, nowadays, how do you know there's going to be a third Beis HaMikdash? I don't know. We sort of like, we just know it. Even though it's been 2,000 years since the last one, we just sort of like figured it out. So it's the same thing. They must have known something was there, and they just didn't know what it was going to be or what it was going to look like or anything like that. Okay, there is a ton of stuff over here. Let's start park both. Bahi. Bishwanu Shavar Abel Shemel says, Bnei Yisrael Meir Tzitzayim, Bashana HaRaviz, Bechodu Ziv, Uchodu Shasheni, Vimlok Shlomo Yisrael, Even by Bashan. In the 480th year after Bnei Yisrael left Egypt, okay, that means 40 years in the desert, 440 years when there was the Shvatim, the Mishkan was around, and eventually to the times of the Beis HaMikdash itself. Okay, so 400. I got it right over here. So 480 years after they had left Mitzrayim, in the fourth year of Shlomo Melech's reign, in the month that was known as Ziv, right, which was the second month for the King Shlomo, Shlomo was king over all Bnei Yisrael, and he built up the Beis HaMikdash. Now, the second month is probably started from Nisan, which means the second month would be Iyar.
Yeah,
so that's the month that it would be over here, and that makes the most sense over here. There's a lot of significance over here. Just call it like this. This year was 480. This is the year 2928 of the world. 2928 of the world. That's when this is made. What's funny is, it really is interesting. From Yetzias Mitzrayim until the first Beis HaMikdash is 480 years. From the first Beis HaMikdash until the second Beis HaMikdash was built is also 480 years. 410 years of the first Beis HaMikdash and 70 years of Galus Vavel. 410 plus 70 is 480 altogether. So it's interesting because you altogether, you have 480 plus 480, you end up having all these altogether. So that's the year 3408 is when the second Beis HaMikdash was built by Zerubbabel and Nehemiah and Ezra, etc. And we're going to see that was destroyed probably at 420, but we're going to talk about that when we get to Ezra and Nehemiah.
This is Rosh Hashanah for Malchus.
Exactly. And it is the Rosh Hashanah for Malchus of Yisrael. Right? That's what we end up learning. And it's the first of the month anyway, it's paragraph plus a dollar. That's where you got to get over here. talk about blessed olives, but now it's going to be a blessed days. There's a lot of questions about what exactly it means, 480 years. How did they count it up all together? It seems the way that we know all this is because Yiftach sent the message to the king of Ammon and said, it has been 300 years since we left Mitzrayim. So the question is, was he exaggerating? Was he underscoring it? Overscoring it? Or was he exact? So there's a lot of different questions. If you go through, Yoshua was king for 28 years. Othniel was king for 40. Ehud for 80. Deborah for 40. Gideon for 40. Abimelech for 3. Tola for 23. Yair for 22. That's 276 years, which means you're missing 24 years. Could be Yuzlav Davka. Either way, they say that during those times there are intervals of where other kings were in charge. Cushan Rishathaim was ruler for 8 years. Eglon was for 18. Yavin, king of Canaan, for 20. Midian for 7. Ammon for 17. We're not up to Shaul yet. But Ammon for 17 is the only Yiftach. Then we said Ammon is 17. Altogether, that's 70. But if you add 276 plus 70, then you come out with 346. Well, that's too much. Then you got way too much over there. So they say that you have to add in some of them to the other, and whatever it is, so that it doesn't overlap so much. You can figure it out to be 300 altogether if you want to put some of these together and to be able to do stuff like that. So some say like that. I'm sorry?
Then you will simultaneously?
Yeah, basically. Right? And then they say that if you don't round it off, if you say 276 years is exact, and it included some of the years where there was subjugation under the other Malkus, and it was just 276, and when he said 300, he meant basically 300. If you say that, then it makes a little bit more sense. Because Ibsen was Nabi for 7 years, Elon for 10, Avdon for 8, Shimshon for 20, Eli for 40, Shmuel for 11, Shaul for 2, David for 40, and Shlomo for 4. Just 2. And that's another 142 years. If you count that as 142 years, maybe there's a little bit of an overlap, so 140, so basically 276 plus 140 altogether. If you do that altogether, you're going to come out with 410, give or take a little bit. It's not so bad, but you're not off by so much, but it basically equals up to 410. Now the problem with that you have to add on a bunch altogether, because that goes up to, yeah, that's going to end up being over there. What would it be? Right. There's a couple of problems over here. Number one, Shaul HaMelech. How old was he when he became king? And how in the world could he have only been 2? If he really became king and he's only king for 2 years and he died at the age of 70, that means he became king at 68. That means he was 18 years older than Shmuel HaNavi. 18 years older than Shmuel HaNavi. That's very strange to say that Shmuel HaNavi, who it always seems to think, the way we look at it, that Shaul HaMelech was a younger person. There are other opinions that Shaul HaMelech was king for 17 years. 17 altogether, and puts it all the way through, right? And then it goes through everything like that. Doesn't really make that much of a difference. It's just saying, how do you figure out the years altogether? There are about 4 different machlokasim. The Ralbag is the one that goes into it the most. Okay. Why year? Year is the best time to start working because the weather is absolutely dry.
So how do you actually get it to 480? It sounds like you can't get it to 480.
No, you can. You just have to add on other years. Actually, it's just a lot altogether. I can show you guys this thing afterward, but that's what it ends up saying. Here, the weather is absolutely dry. You need to make sure when you're building up something like the Beis HaMikdash that you can't have any wet conditions, or else the foundation will be pretty bad. There's no way it's kosher. Yeah. No way it's kosher. That wouldn't make any sense, and we wouldn't do that anyway. But that's the reason why they had to do it. And they wanted to wait until after Pesach altogether. That would make sense also to be able to wait until they started building it.
Yeah, now, it would make sense that it would say exactly 480 then, like right after.
Yeah. Yeah, literally right around that. It's 480 in 1 month. So, Pazuk Beis. My Baiz Asher Bana Melech Shlomo Hashem. Shishim Ama Oroko V'Esrim Rochvo Shloshim Ama Komaso. The house that Shlomo Melech built for HaKadosh Baruch Hu was 60 Amos long, 20 Amos wide, 30 Amos tall. Now, obviously, this is not the Beis HaMikdash. This is a reference to the size of the Heichal. The Heichal, which is where the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim was, this is the area where we have the Mizbeach HaKtores, the Menorah, the Shulchan, as well as the Aron Kodesh. That's what was over there. Now, by the Mishkan, it was 30 by 10, it was 10 by 10 by 30. I should say, I'm sorry, I said that wrong. 30 almost long, 10 almost wide, 10 almost tall. So this was almost double, 60 by 20 by 30. In its height. Okay, 60 by 20 by 30. So basically a little bit altogether. Now, it happens to be that the Beis HaMikdash was not that small. Beis HaMikdash is really 120 amos tall. Okay, but we're not going to figure out what does the 30 amos mean from over here. To give you a basic hint of what 120 is, remember an amma is about a foot and a half. So give or take, that means that 120 amos is going to be 180 feet.
That's right.
That is give or take 17 stories of a building. Give or take about 17 or 18 stories of a building, which is unbelievably impressive. Unbelievably impressive. Now, we got a lot over here to try to figure out, so let's try to figure this all out over here. Plus a gimel. It says, Ba'ulam al pnei heichal abayis etzrim ama orko. It says that the ulam, which was the actual chamber that was outside, right outside of the heichal, was etzrim ama orko pnei rochav abayis, etzer b'ama rochav pnei abayis. Now, we have to figure something out before we start. Length and width, when it comes to the numbers that we're going to mention over here, is totally different from normal length and width. Okay? Length and width when it comes to the Beis HaMikdash, length is the longer side. Width is the shorter side. Even if it's facing a different direction, it's really, wait, no, that's the length, that's the width. No. In this table, for example, this is most positively its length, that is the width. So anytime you have a bigger number for width and length, assume that the bigger number is the length and the smaller number is the width. That's true by everything in the Torah. The Teva, for example, was 300 amos long, 30 amos, 50 amos wide, 30 amos tall. Again, the reason why it's length and width, how do you know how to measure the Teva? Maybe the Teva should be measured a different way. The answer is that the longer one is going to be the length, and that's what it's supposed to be. I'm sorry?
Google Torah?
Just regarding sizes.
No, that's what I'm saying.
Oh, throughout, yes, you can say it that way. Ulam, why was it called the Ulam? Because it was considered strong. It was strengthened by the additional room. Now, check it out over here, guys. If you look at this little picture over here, the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Kodesh HaKadoshim was 20 by 20 amos. 20 amos wide, 20 amos long. There's no difference because it's the exact same size. Again, 30 amos tall. The sanctuary, which was the Heichal, that's where the Mizbeach, the Mizbeach HaKetores, and the Shulchan and the Menorah were, was 40 amos long and 20 amos wide. Okay, 40 and 20 all together. And that all together was 60. This is 20. Added onto it was another 10 by 20 amma ulam. Okay, that was the ulam. Its width, now, does that make any sense? You see, this is the length. But now this is the width. That doesn't make much sense, right? But that's the width. But because it's considered, yeah, that's true. But the main point is that it's shorter than the other, and the length is going to be 20. Even though normally that length should be the width, nonetheless, that's considered the length, and that's considered the width. Now, I'm sorry? What do you mean by making it even? This even, you mean?
Yeah.
Yes, correct. Vayas v'bayis chalonei shtufim atzumim. So he made for the house these lookout windows that were right there. Now there's a lot of different question of how it looked exactly and what it's supposed to be. Most windows, the way they're supposed to run in order to get more light to maximize the amount of light that you have, is what you end up having is that you have the windows smaller on the outside but bigger on the inside. That doesn't mean to purposely make them small on the outside, but rather they get bigger as it goes in. As the wall is deep, you have that, and then the light can shine a little bit further. If you look at most sky roofs, meaning if you have that in the house, there's going to be a little area, and as the ceiling goes down, it'll get a little bit bigger to maximize the amount of light that comes through. Okay, of course, you could just make the window huge, right? But if you want to make the window a certain size, you maximize it by opening it up a little bit further. By the Mishkan, it was the exact, by the Beis HaMikdash, I should say, it's the exact opposite. There were no windows in the Mishkan. They were covered by skins. In the Beis HaMikdash, it was the exact opposite. It was wider on the inside, smaller on the smaller on the inside, wider on the outside. And the reason why is because they wanted to minimize the amount of space that a person could see into the Beis HaMikdash. In other words, there was a large space for them to look at, a big window, but it went like that, so that they couldn't see that much when it came to the Beis HaMikdash itself. It was also to show as a remez, God doesn't need the light of the sun to make it light in the Beis HaMikdash. He doesn't need that. The light that happens inside the Beis HaMikdash, it was lit up at all times without anything there, even if the menorah wasn't lit. It would always look like it was daylight inside, even though there wasn't that much light inside. Yeah.
Why do we want people to see?
No, we don't want people to see.
Why do we want people to see?
Well, Beis HaMikdash is supposed to be a private place. First of all, if you got inside, You couldn't go into the Azara unless you were taller like a Kohen, and even then you couldn't really go that far. So to get that far, you wouldn't be the type of person to look. That's number one, right? But number two, stop that. It could also mean something totally different. It could be that the Beis HaMikdash had glass panes, and it was one of the only houses back then to have that. Now, glass back then was opaque. It was not see-through like it is nowadays. And therefore, when it meant that there were atumim closed up, it meant that there were windows, but they were closed up with glass. And that's what it had outside. Couldn't it be it was the first stained glass window? That was right, that there wasn't allowed to be there. Another Rekhanim said that there were shutters there and stuff like that. Okay, here we go. Pasuk K. By even out here, Habayis, he built on a side structure on the wall of the house, Yatsiyah. That's the side structure, Saviv. It went around the base of it. There's just Kiros Habayis, Saviv, Lehechol. Vladimir Vyas, Slow, Saviv. And he made sides all around. And this is what it was like. We're going to see what it is. The side structure is going to be in the wall of the temple itself. We're going to see that there was the wall of the actual Beis HaMikdash, and then there was another wall that would be for the side structure. Okay? So we're going to see over there, and some say it was like this, that it was a wall of the side structure and a wall of the Beis HaMikdash, and then something in between. Some say it was like this, some say it was like that. But altogether, this is what it would look like, and we'll see what it was, and we'll see what it is on the outside of the Heichal. Hayitziah, this side structure, was going to be atachtona on the bottom level, because there were going to be three levels altogether. Chamesh Ba'ama Rafa, five Amas wide, Batihona Shesh Ba'ama, the middle one was six Amas wide, Vashlish is Sheva Ba'ama, the third one was seven Amas wide, Rachba, Kimi Groz Nasan Labai Saviv, they made these depressions all around it on the outside, Saviv Chutza, Levilti Achos Bekir Zabayis, they would not be attached to the walls of the house. They were afraid that having it attached to the walls of the house, something might rot a little bit and affect something else. They made sure that it wouldn't happen, and that's what it means over here, that there was going to be little houses, little places where there was going to be. So we're going to see these rooms are over there, and they had walls that were right around. And these are the side structures that were over there. Now, what were these houses used for? We'll get to it in a second. Habayis bibanoso evan shlema masa nivna. The house, when it was built, was made out of whole stones. As we said, that they were quarried. That's masa nivna, right? They were built as that way. Makavus vagars and kokle barzel nishma habayis bibanoso. There were no axes nor hammers that were ever used in the Beis HaMikdash area when it was being built. If they needed to do something with an axe or a hammer, they did it outside the Beis HaMikdash area, not in the Beis HaMikdash area, or they used the, as you said before, the Shamir worm. How do you get to the Shamir worm? Oh, I forgot. Did I not tell you guys the Shamir worm story yet?
What's that?
I didn't know you guys. Oh, I just read it and I was like, okay. I'm sorry, yeah. No, I thought I'd said it, but it was because I just read it really quickly and I was like, okay, fine. Okay, the Shamir one is an awesome story, and that's part of why this is so such a long thing over here. So one opinion easily says is that Shlomo Melech spoke to the eagle and told the eagle, go get me the Shamir worm. The Shamir worm was sitting in the Garden of Eden, right? That eagle ran the Garden of Eden, brought it back to Shlomo Melech, and Shlomo Melech used it, and that was that. Now that's the easy answer. What's right? That he just got it from the Garden of Eden. Okay, a worm that has the ability to bite through or crack through anything without any issues whatsoever. Meaning, it's just like an axe that causes a perfect indentation without using anything metal. So you just put the worm on something, you have it on there, and it'll crack through everything that's there. Now, there are some opinions, the weird opinions, that say that it wasn't an animal at all, but it was referring to some type of a, almost like a laser beam, right? But let's go with the Pashup shot they're referring to animals and stuff like that, okay? How did he get it? So here's the Gemara. The Gemara is in the beginning of the Perek of Misha Aksu Kordaikis. It's about 3 years from now, just for God. Okay, Gittin. And it's in the seventh parak, and it says the following. Okay, so here's what happened. Shlomo didn't know how to build the Beis HaMikdash. He said to the Sanhedrin, how do I build the Beis HaMikdash? They told him, you need the Shamir worm. He said, where do you get the Shamir worm from? They said, well, why don't you ask the Shadim? The Shadim were born on the sixth day during Bein HaShemashos, so on Friday, right before Shabbat started. So to the Shamir worm, you should go ask the Shadim. He captured a male and a female Shade. He got them together, and he said, where's the Shamir worm? They said, we have no idea. You'd have to ask Ashmadai, king of the demons. He said, where is Ashmadai, king of the demons? Where can I find him? So he said, the Shadim said, he spends all this time in Yeshiva Shalmaila. He comes down and he has a little hole in the ground where he has water. He has a rock on top of that he seals with his seal. And then he breaks the seal, opens up the rock, and drinks from that water. And then he goes to Yeshiva Shalmata. Okay, then he goes to Yeshiva Shabbat and he learns all day there. Okay, so that's that. That's how you can get him. So he sent Benio Ben Yoyada, and his mom was like MacGyver. Like, he gave him tuft of wool, a rope. He gave him the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu on a chain, right? And that was, and a flask of wine. And he's like, go for it, MacGyver, and he could do it. So this is what Benio Ben Yoyada did. He went to the well and he saw that the thing was made so well. If he breaks the seal, then Hashem, the king of the demons, is going to know about it. He's not going to want to drink from it. So what did he do? He built a hole, a pit, right next to the pit of Ashmadeh, king of the demons. And he built it all the way down. He went all the way to the bottom of Ashmadeh, the king of the demons' pit. And then he built up, and he made a hole in it, and he made all the water come out. Then he sealed it up, right, with dirt and mud and stuff like that, and it went back up a little bit. He made a hole in the side of the pit of Ashmadeh, king of the demons' pit, and then he put wine all the way up to the top of the pit, and then stuffed it up with that tuft of wool, the little tuft of wool, so that none of it would come out. Then he sealed up his own pit, right, put dirt on top of it, ran up a tree, and went to go see what was going to happen. Ashmadeh, king of the demons, flies down from Shemaim after learning Yeshiva Shemaila, comes and looks at his rock and realizes that it's still locked, unlocks it, takes off the stone, looks inside and smells wine. He says, what? I can't drink wine. I'm going to get drunk. How could a Talmud Chacham like me get drunk? But he was very thirsty, and he said, well, I have to. So he darshaned for himself that it was mutter, took a little bit of the wine, immediately got drunk, and fell asleep. But Yobaniya then jumped down off the tree, put his chains down in Ashmadeh, king of the demons, and rolled them, wrapped them up inside the chains. When Ashmadeh, king of the demons, woke up, he said, Shmadamari Allah, the name of God is upon you. It's on the chains. If you break the chains, you're going to break God's name. So you can't break the chains. So Ashmadeh, king of the demons, reluctantly have to go with Benio Ben Yoyada. On the way to Shlomo Melech, a lot of crazy things happen, but we don't have to mention all of them. Tons of things happen. Like 9 things happened on the way there. Benio Ben Yoyada asked about all of them, and he told them everything what he had done. He got there, he was put in jail for 3 days. On the second day, he asked, why doesn't the king want me yet? And they told him that the king has drunk too much wine. Shlomo Melech was doing this as a test. So what did he do? He took a brick, and he put another brick on top of the first brick. So they said, they went to Shlomo Melech, and they said to Shlomo Melech, what does that mean? And Shlomo Melech said, what he's telling you is that in order to get rid of a headache for wine, you should drink more wine, which I'm sure most people know already, right? So then he said, okay, so the next day, he said to the guards, why doesn't Shlomo Melech want me? And they said, he ate too much. So he took the brick and took it off the other brick. He said, what does that mean? And he said, oh, that means that if you have a stomach ache, you shouldn't eat anything for a while to let your stomach settle a little bit. He called Shlomo Melech on the third day. Ashmadeh is called on the third day. Ashmadeh comes in front of him, takes a stick, throws it on the ground, and said, that's the size of your grave. What do you want from me? You rule over the entire world, Shlomo Melech. You have to rule over me as well. Shlomo said, I don't need you. I need the Shamir worm. Show me who the Shamir worm is, and I'll let you go. So Ashmadeh, king of the demons, says, the Shamir worm is not by me. It's owned by the Sar of Yah, by the angel of the sea. The angel of the sea doesn't give it to anybody, except for one type of animal that's called the Nagar Tur, which is the wild rooster that lives up in the mountains. I don't know what kind of a bird this is. And it uses it because when it wants to make a yeshuv, when it wants something up there in the mountains, it usually takes the Shamir worm in order to crack a hole in the mountain. It takes a seed and then lets it water, right? And he creates a tree, and then he has an automatic yeshuv. So he's able to make yeshuv in the mountains. That's what the Nagar Tura uses it for. So Shlomo Melech says, okay, fine. He went and he found a Nagar Tura that had children, sent Benio Ben Yoyada, the right-hand man that does everything for Shlomo Melech. Benio Ben Yoyada went up to the top where this Nagar Tura was. When he got to the Nagar Tura, he saw that the children were there, and the Nagar Tura went out to go get worms or something to be able to feed its babies. He took a glass box and put it on top of the baby birds. Okay, the Nagar Tura saw that there was a glass box on the outside, so it ran to go get the Shamir worm. It brought the Shamir worm, put it on top of the glass, and Yoba came out of nowhere and said, boo. The Nagar Tura ran away. He took the Shamir worm. The Nagar Tura, when he saw that he had given up the Shamir worm, went and killed itself. I would assume that the kids died as well. They were unfortunate. I guess you could say that calamity is due to Shlomo Melech wanting to build a base to make Dash. Very strange, right? But at the end of the day, all those Nagar Turas died. That was just Shamir worm. In the end of the day, Shlomo challenged Ashmadeh, king of the demons, and wondered why Shadim are more powerful than people. Ashmadeh says, you have no idea what my power is. Take off my chains, and I'll show you what my power is. So he did. He took off. Never do that, by the way. For the future, never do that, ever. It's a trick. It's a trap. So Ashmadeh, king of the demons, took off the... So he took took the chains off Ashmadai, king of the demons. Ashmadai swallowed up Shlomo Melech and spit him 400 amos, 400 parsa. I'm sorry, this is about 600 miles away, 800 miles away. And he started walking himself back, and he tried telling everybody that he was the real king. And he told everybody that nobody would believe him, and that's Kohelis. Ani Kohelis, right? And that's what he's referring to. I am Kohelis. I had everything in the world, and now I have nothing. That's what he was trying to say. Ashmadai, meanwhile, dressed up as Shlomo Melech and started asking for the queens when they were in Nida, and would only sleep with them when they were in Nida. That was a lot of crazy stuff. Shlomo Melech came back, he chased away Ashmadai, king of the demons, but from that point on, he was always scared of Ashmadai, so he always had 60 strong men outside his bed, and he started the council
chamber for Skolanim, etc.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's really Birchas Kohanim because there's 60 letters in Birchas Kohanim. Anyway, that's the Gemara. It's an unreal Gemara, and I'm skipping half of it, but it's an unreal Gemara. It's about two and a half, two blot altogether that goes all the way through. I'm sorry, I thought I told you guys that. I did not. Oh, I told you guys about the two headed guy.
Yeah.
That,
yeah.
You know, that's the matter. That's all you know about. Yeah, that, okay. That's that. Anyway, there's a lot of different questions about how they were able to move these stones, which are absolutely huge. One of the opinions, which is absolutely awesome, is that the stones miraculously fit themselves into their own place without any maneuvering by the people whatsoever. They just brought the stones somewhat near, and they just found themselves inside there. It was a remez that, just like Shlomo Melech, did not need to do anything. There was just peace and harmony in the world, so to itself. So too, it's supposed to represent the Torah, that the Torah is perfect. There is nothing that we can do to make it better or to improve them whatsoever. Others say that there was the Malachim that took the stones, and the Malachim were the ones who put them in place. Now, here's the crazy part. These stones that were used for the Kodesh and the Kodesh Kedoshim were taken by the Malachim right before Nebuchadnezzar came into the Beis HaMikdash. They were taken away and hidden somewhere else, and other stones were put in their place. So when Nebuchadnezzar said, I just destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, the Malachim laughed at him and said, you never destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. Those were fake stones that we put in their place, and that's why you were able to destroy it. Which may explain how they were able to burn down the Beis HaMikdash. How do you burn down a stone structure? Right. You can't. It's impossible. But nonetheless, they were able to. Right? Why? Because, I don't even know who thought of that. Let's burn it! It's stones. What are you thinking? You can't burn that down, but nonetheless, they did it. Yeah.
It's a lot to handle.
Yeah, it's a crazy amount. Here is what everything looked like, guys. Everybody see it over here? This is what it was. The Kodesh HaKadoshim, the Kodesh right over here, a little doorway and the little antechamber, right? That's the Ulam that was outside, okay? These are all walls. Everything that is gray over here are considered walls. All of these things over here were considered the little chambers on the side. These were the side structures, the Yatsiya, where they had rooms. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3. That is 13 right here. There was a second floor, 26 rooms, and a third floor, 39 rooms. So altogether, there were 39 rooms of the Yitzios that were on the side of the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Yes.
And the Yitzios are not the same thing as the Lishka, or however I'm saying it,
the Torah. No. Yeah, the Lishka was totally separate. Those were further back over here on the other side. These were obviously only used by Kohanim, because it was right outside the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim. It was also the only way to get to the doorway, to be able to open up the doorway to the Beis HaMikdash. You have to go through this entrance of the side structure. We'll get to it in a second.
And the Ulam and the Ophel were two separate.
Ulam and the
Ophel?
I don't know what the Ophel is.
I think I remember we learned in the Jerusalem history of Vegas.
Ophel? I don't know what it is at all. Maybe it's in the second Beis HaMikdash? I've never heard of it. You know what? Maybe it's just not here and I just don't know what that Ophel. I don't know what that is.
Well, right, the Jerusalem history thing is all in the second Beis HaMikdash.
So maybe there's something different. It could be something different over there. Pesach Atzelet says in Pasuk Chas, Pesach Atzelet Yichon El Ketzav Abayis HaYimanis. Okay. Now the entrance of the side structure was right in the middle, right, to the right-hand side if you were standing facing outward of the Kodesh. That's the way it was. Ubelulim Yalu Ala Tichonim and Tichon El Ashlishim. And then there were spiral stairways that went from one side to the next one, in which they went up to the second floor and up to the third floor. There were stairways right to the room above, possibly in every single one of the rooms. Oh. Every single one of the rooms also would have had one.
It's interesting that they give you directions
since you're back facing the Kodesh Kodesh, we're going to explain why in a second, but yeah, it's going to make a little bit of sense because that's the way to be able to stand. But no, not in that way, but really it's going to be that you're going to have to turn to the right. Okay, so here's the idea of what it was supposed to be. Some say, by the way, it was a ladder, that there was just a hole in the room on top, and you had to go through a ladder to be able to go up there or whatever. Here's the way that you went in. The Kohen, in order to open up the doors to get to the Kodesh Kodesh, had to walk into the sideway and then go through room number one, room number two, room number three. There was a tiny little entranceway that went into the outer rooms. So the first thing he would do is he opened up the doors to the outer rooms. He would unlock it from the inside. Okay, the reason why is because he had to have his back to the Kodesh and the Kodesh Kodashim. Don't do that when these doors are open. So first doors he would open with these two. Then he would turn around and he would open up these two, and they'd walk out facing the Kodesh and Kodesh Kodesh, and walk out that way, and then go out the other way, and everything was all good. That's how you would go out, and that's how we would be able to go. Good stuff. That's the run over here. In the second Beis HaMikdash, there were two openings. One was over here, and one was over there. Now remember, this is west, this is east. Okay, so that means this is north, this is south. In the second Beis HaMikdash, the southern door was never used. The northern door was used. So instead they went that way. They say because of the Nevuah of Yechezkel, it seems that the Shekhinah was supposed to come in through the southern door. So nobody ever walked in through the southern door. That's what it was supposed to be. Unfortunately, the Shekhinah never made it to the second Beis HaMikdash. But it was supposed to go through the what's it called? The second, the doors right over there. I'm sorry? No. You couldn't walk through it at all. It was not able to be used. It was locked at all times.
Okay.
There we go. Pasuk Tes. But even if it's a Bayis Vayich, he built the house and he finished it. Again, this is not the whole Beis HaMikdash, this is just the Heichal and the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadosh, meaning that area.
The main part.
But yes, but and then he covered up the house, gave him with tiles, usteros ba'razim, and rows of cedar boards. That's what he ended up doing. Some say this is a reference to the roof, that the roof was given a wavy appearance with certain types of rows of stone in clay that made it look like it was wavy, almost like the sea itself. Others say that it was cedar boards that we used for the workers to walk on if they had to fix something so they didn't have to walk into the Kodesh or the Kodesh Kodashim itself. Others say that this whole thing was there to be waterproof, so that nothing would be able to go down to the Kodesh or Kodesh Kodashim itself. But even as Yetzial Kol Bayis Chamesh Amos Kamaso, Yechuz Abayis Ba'atzia Razin, he built the side structure on all of the house. The height of each one was 5 amos, and then he attached it to the house with cedar worms of cedar wood all together, all the way around, and the side structures were put all the way around, and that's that. The word of God was to Shlomo, saying, this is not to Shlomo directly, this was through a Navi, probably through Achyoh HaShiloni. It was also the Rebbe of Rosh
Hashanah. Shlomo Navi at this point?
No, Shlomo Melech only got 2 nevuos. Okay, there were only 2 nevuos he ever got. One was what we said all the way in the beginning, and one toward the end of his life. Okay, the Gemara says that it's not just Stam. He only had 2 nevuos. There was never another time that he got it.
Like it's a nevuos,
yeah. Yes, it does, but it would have said Lishlomo instead of El Shlomo.
The Radak says it was
Achia Hashiloni. Achia Hashiloni makes sense, yeah. And that's that. Now, Habayis Azer Shartambona says in Pasuk Yud Beis, this house that you are building in Taylor Pachukos, Avis Mishpataita said, if you go in my Chukos and you do my Mishpatin, Shematas go inside of Lechazvam, and you go in my ways and you keep all my mitzvos, Akimosi is the Vri Yitach, I will keep my word with you. That's what it says. Actually, Debartel David Abicha, that I spoke to David your father. Shchati Vizov Bnei Yisrael, I will live among Bnei Yisrael, below Azovis Bnei Ami Yisrael, and I will never forsake my people Israel. So if you do it correctly, you don't have to worry about anything. If everybody looks at that last pasuk and pasuk Yud Gimel, Vishachanti is Shachin Tof Yud. I will live in here for 410 years. That's the remez over here. That's number one. Number two, Shani, first, third, and fifth letters. Shani is Tof Kaf. Second base of Mitzvah will be 420 years altogether. Remember, the first was 410, second was 420. If you look at it again, if you want to look at it again, Kanti, Chaf, Nun, Tof, Yud, altogether, is the Gematria of 480. That was 480 years from when the Mishka, when they left Mitzrayim. And Vishachain is the Gematria of Shlomo, it's off by one. So if that helps you a little bit, that's the idea of what we're trying to learn over here. That is a fort from the, I forgot who, but it's mentioned in Parshas Truma, because also the Shechanti is open in Israel. It says it over there as well, that is 100%. And this is a reminder to Shlomo Malach. Now, Pasuk Yudalav, even Shlomo Zabayzeh Haleu, Shlomo Malach built the house. This probably refers to the outer walls and the roof, because he already finished the Kodesh and the Kodesh production, but and he finished it up. Now, even as Kiros Abayz Mi Baisa Betzalos, Aroz Mi Karka Abayz Ad Kiros Ad Sipun, he built up the walls of the house on the inside with panels of cedar on the inside. They never saw the cedar because it was surrounded by gold. Because it says, Sipa eats me bayis, Baitas Karka Abayz Betzalos Broshin. He did the wood from the inside, and then he made the ground together with cypress wood. As we said before, cypress was much harder than cedar wood. Cedar wood was more choshuv, but cypress was more hard, and that's why it was used for the floor itself. The outside of all these walls and the inside of the walls were filled with gold so that you could never see the actual wood. But even as Esrim Amam Yarkesei Abayas Betzalos Arozin, he built 20 amos at the far end of the Beis Hamikdash, of the house itself. He made it with panels of cedar, mina karka ad akiros, from the floor to the ceiling, even lo mibayis zivir, the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And then he built it on the inner side of the dividing wall for the Kodesh HaKadoshim altogether. Now this area of the Kodesh HaKadoshim is what we're referring to over here, the 20 by 20 amos at the very end, which is the Kodesh HaKadoshim itself. He made this area. They started with the Kodesh HaKadoshim before anything else. And although he said he already finished, now we're going into the details of what he did. He made it a perfect cube. Some say 20 by 20 by 20. Others say 20 by 20, and then the height was sort of deceiving. It looked like it was 20 almost because there were things hanging down, but it actually was 30 almost altogether. Some say that was done on purpose. There was a little bit of extra space so that the ketores that was burned on the inside of the Kodesh would be able to go. The smoke would go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim itself as well. In Pasuk Yud Zayin, Ba'arboyim Ba'am.
Just for that purpose and that kind of gap.
I was also concussion just to make it look really nice. Remember, the total height was 120 amos. It went further up after that. So something on the outside as well. 40 amos was the bias, that is the hechal, in front of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. That's what it means by lifanoi. It means in front of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Pasuk Yichas, the erez el habayis penima. The house was cedar on the inside, miklas pekoim, and there were designs of buds, Turi Tzitzim, as well as blossoms. Hakol Erez, everything on the cedar woods, Ein Evan Nira, no stone was visible. It made it look beautiful with the types of wood all around. The word miklas, I just said, means carved. It could also mean pictures and designs. Some say it means branches. The flowers looked like they were actually growing. They might have actually been. Others say it refers to curtains that were on top. Now, the innermost area where he's going to have, that's the place where he planned on putting the Aron Brith Hashem, which obviously was referring to the Kodesh HaKadoshim, right? Obviously? No.
Oh.
This was a secret room. They made another room way, way, way underneath the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim. It was a secret room that was made specifically for when they needed to bring the Aron Kodesh down and they were worried about the Aron Kodesh being taken. Nobody knew about this room except for the kings. Every king gave it over to the Navi as well as his son to pass it down to the next generation. And it went from one generation to the other. The only time there was a little bit of a problem was by King Yoshia. And even King Yoshia ended up hearing it from the famous Kohen Gadol at the time. Yoshia, when he realized that the Nevuos were coming true and the Beis HaMikdash would be destroyed within the next 100 years, took the Aron Kodesh and put it down in the secret chamber. From that point on, the Aron Kodesh was never known to be there. During the times of Hizkiah, Menashe, all those kings, there was no Aron Kodesh in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. It was down further in the secret room, and no one knows or knew where it is.
So how do we know about this? And they didn't.
Well, they knew. They just didn't know where it was. They couldn't find the entrance way to it. They had no idea where to go. And you don't just stop and dig under the Kodesh HaKadoshim and the Kodesh. They knew it was somewhere, but they weren't sure exactly where it was. But everyone knew, and this is the hint to it. They made it mipnima, hidden on the inside. That's where he prepared to put the Aron Kodesh there if it ever needed to be put there. And that is where it is, and it's still there today. 100% it is still there today. It has never been taken out. Not even Indiana Jones was able to take it out. So that movie, totally a fake. I know that's a shocker to everyone. Totally a fake. Pretty crazy, right?
Existed in American government.
Not quite. What time do we got, guys? How much more time?
Yeah,
we have a little bit of time. Let's go. Okay. With Nad's beer.
Why was Yoshi a problem on getting the information?
Salio was the queen before her. She killed every single person except for one. Right, so that was the issue. The issue was...
He was a pretty good king, right?
Yeah, he was a great king, right. He did some wrong things toward the end of his life, but he was a great king his whole life because of his Rebbe. But Salio was such an evil queen, she killed off everybody. So at one point, there was nobody left. I might be off on the word Yoshi. The other king. Yeah, I always get mixed up between Yoshi and somebody else. But Yoshi is the one who hit it. I just don't remember if Salio. There was one point where there was a problem that nobody... Nobody knew it because Asalia killed off everyone. The whole king family.
Yeah.
King's family except for...
With
Nad's beer, Esrim Amma Orech, Esrim Amma Rochav. In front of the Beis HaMikdash, there was, again, 20 Amos and 20 Amos. The Esrim Amma Komaso, by Tapeu Zav Sagur. They surrounded the Kodesh HaGadashim with this Zav Sagur. This is the best kind of gold you can get. It's the kind of gold that when anybody brings it out, it's such fine gold that all other stores close up shop when it comes in. That's why it's called Zav Sagur. The Itzap Mizbeach Erez, and he covered the Mizbeach filled with cedar wood. Now it seems that he made a brand new Mizbeach. The Mizbeach HaKetores that Moshe Rabbeinu made was doubled in size by the time of Shlomo Melech. Not only that, Chazal say that he made 10 Mizbeachos of Ketores, 10 menorahs and 10 shulchans. And where he got the remnants for that is a bit of a kasha, but he got it and he made 10 of them, and that's the hint over here. He made it bigger than what it once was. Okay, now by Yitzhak Shlomo's advice, Mipnimas of Sagori surrounded on the inside with this gold by Yaber Baratukos Zahav with Nadir Vesapeu Zahav. He then went ahead and made golden chains in front of the Kodesh HaKadoshim and plated it with gold. You ever wonder why by the 7-Eleven there might be locks on the door if it's open 24/7? The Kodesh HaKadoshim was the same way. It had golden locks on the outside of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, but it was never locked. Never locked. Maybe as a remnant to the gates of Shemayim that they're never closed. You understand? That's what it could be referring to over here. But that's the idea behind it. The rest of the house, in other words, the other part of the Kodesh and everything like that, he's surrounded with gold until he finished plating the entire house. And all of the Mizbeach that was right there by the sphere was covered up with gold. This is not the same type of gold. In fact, some people say that it's really silver. Others say that it's a type of gold that says chashuv as silver. In other words, I mean, as chashuv as silver, ketef usually means the word desirable. So it was a desirable gold, not silver in of itself. No, for sure not copper. No, for sure not copper. We're not talking copper over here. This is a hard one over here. He made in the Dvir in the Kodesh HaKadoshim two other Kruvim of wood. Except for the Aron, you mean?
Yes.
Yes. They were made of wood, 10 Amos tall altogether. Each kruv had 5 amos altogether. 10 amos mixos knapav aksos knapav. 10 amos from one end of the wings to the other end of the wings. Now, everybody remember how big the Kodesh HaKadoshim was? 20 amos by 20 amos. If the wings were 5 amos each, that means 5 plus 5 plus 5 plus 5 is 20, but that doesn't include the size of the actual kruv itself. So it was impossible to fit in. It was absolutely miraculous that it fit in.
Would they use the ones that came on the iron?
They used the ones that were on top of the iron as well. These were much bigger. The kasha is why Shlomo Melech made them in the first place.
Yeah.
That's a big kasha in and of itself. But apparently Shlomo Melech held that there was a remnant in the Torah that you could make two other kruvim, and these kruvim had to be up there. No. But Shlomo Melech made them and they went through. There is an opinion that says because it's impossible to fit in, Tosfos holds, and if you look at the Gemara of Bava Basra on Daf Tzadi Tes, they went sideways. Mm-hmm. We all know that a diagonal of a square is bigger than the square itself. If they went in the diagonal, you could fit them all in. So they put them in a diagonal as opposed to right there, so it was able to fit with the bodies itself. Okay, then it says, we'll finish this off. It says, where is it? In Pasuk Chof Vod, the Ezer Ba'ama Kruva Sheni, 10 Amos was the Kruva Sheni, the second one, Mida Achas, they both were the same size, the Ketav Echod, they're all the same form, Mishnah Kruvim for both Kruvim. Komas HaKruva Achod, Ezer Ba'ama V'chena Kruva Sheni, both of them were 10 Amos tall. That could not fit in the Mishkan. In the Mishkan, remember, the Mishkan was exactly 10 Amos. I shouldn't say it couldn't fit. It could fit, but it was exactly 10 Amos. Here's another really cool thing about this, okay? We're not going to talk about what the Kruvim looked like. You can go back to my Parsha on Parsha's Truma, and you can go listen to what I wrote this year, because I talked all about it. No, not this year. 2 years ago. I talked all about it over there. I will tell you something really, really awesome. Others say the Kruvim had wings that were foldable. So the wings were able to fold over so that they could be moved at all times. But they weren't made that way. They were made with solid gold, and then they were able to be moved whenever they needed to be moved, which is absolutely crazy. Another thing is that when the Kruvim were destroyed altogether and the Kruvim were all gone, instead of having the Kruvim themselves inside, they took the Kruvim out and they put them in the with the Aron Kodesh down in that extra room, and then they painted Kruvim on the sides of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. They painted actual Kruvim on there, and the Kruvim were in an embrace. And when the Goyim came in, they saw those and went out and said, look what these people are drawing on the walls. They're drawing these types of things. That's what they end up seeing. We'll start with
Pastor Huff dying. He didn't actually